In the Badlands, you could see rocks of every color and shape. One time, over unending cliffs of gray rocks, we saw a cloud and fog storm approaching as if it were aiming right for us. I had never been so scared or so excited. We didn't want to get caught in the fog because then we might have to stay put until we could safely return to our car. What if we walked off a cliff in the fog? And yet, we couldn't leave. It was as if the rocks were holding us there. I mean, they were only rocks. But for some reason, those rocks made lonely feel good. Those clouds made you dream big. Not big like you could make a lot of money or like you could have a good job. Bigger than those things. It was complicated. I mean, big like you were part of the sky, which also made you feel small. I don't know how to explain it. The last time I had been there, we'd seen tan rocks shaped like the hides of some sort of animal. Nobody will ever convince me that those rocks weren't as alive as I was. They were just on a different timetable. "Have some coffee, and then we should get going," Mrs. Parker said to my grandparents. I pulled my mind away from the rocks as Mrs. Parker began to gesture toward the workers one at a time. "This is Sean Murphy, Rory O'Brien, and Mick Ryan. They're from Ireland. And this is Bill McCoy and Larry Dark. They're American. Folks," now she was pointing at us, "Toshiro and Yukiko Sakata and their grandkids, Summer and Jazz." Many custom harvesters hired non-Americans. The Parkers hired their foreign employees legally through an agricultural program at Ohio State University. The employees got paid by the month, regardless of whether they worked 16-hour days or hardly any hours because of rain. It was impossible to harvest during a rain because combines can't thresh wheat if it's too moist. Since the hours could be really long and you had to live for months at a time in a camper, custom harvesters found that foreign employees were more likely to stick with the job than Americans. This is how nice the Parkers are. At the end of every season, they always take the employees on a special trip, like to a big city or to a NASCAR race. We went to NASCAR with them once, and I have to say that sitting for hours in the sun and watching a bunch of cars speed by me was about the most upside-down day of my life. I mean, everyone, even Ji-chan, got all excited when there was an accident right in front of us. If you were a nice person, such as my father and Ji-chan and the other workers, why would an accident excite you? It was like all the rules about driving that applied in the outside world didn't apply at NASCAR. Then a bunch of men who worked for NASCAR helped the driver out of his car and blood dripped down his forehead. He wasn't hurt badly, but still, it was totally bizarre how excited everyone was. My dad said I just didn't understand men and cars and what they meant to one another, and I said, "Amen to that." And my mom laughed out loud. She always says that. Anyway, the two Americans were older, probably retirement age like my grandparents. The Irish guys looked like they were in their 20s. Irish workers always use the word lads, but I thought of them as guys. Lads just didn't sound right. All the men wore jeans and t-shirts with writing or pictures on them. Mr. Dark's shirt said, "Keep America for the Americans." And Rory said, "The Number of the Beast," which was an Iron Maiden record from way back in the early 80s. Some guys at school were obsessed with that music. My grandparents didn't believe in such t-shirts, because why should you pay to advertise for someone else? I had tried to explain to them that you could use t-shirts to express yourself. Ji-chan had shaken his head and said woefully, "No can be different by doing same thing as everyone else." "Will you be driving combines then?" Mick asked. The Irish guys from our last harvest did the same thing, used "ya" for "you" in the singular and "use" for "you" in the plural. Isn't that cool?
"I drive, she cook," Ji-chan said. "She best cook in the country."
I tried to figure out who'd be doing what. 4 semi-drivers, 3 combine drivers, 1 tractor driver, but that left an extra combine. The logistics always made my head spin. And then there was Oba-chan and we 3 kids, including Robbie. What I could figure out is that Oba-chan and I would be cooking for 12 every day. Yikes! We all headed outside, and Mr. Parker gave us our driving assignments. I think it went as follows. We'd leave our Ford at the Parkers, and Oba-chan would drive one of the Parkers' pickups, which was attached to the smaller camper, the camper the Parkers would be living in. Jazz, Thunder, and I would ride with her. The pickup would also be the service car we would drive for the whole harvest, used to shop for groceries or to make a parts run if any of the machinery broke. Ji-chan was driving a semi, which was hauling the tractor and grain cart. The three Irish drivers were each driving a semi, each hauling one combine and one grain trailer for an extra long load. Mr. Darth and Mr. McCoy would each drive a pickup hauling a combine header. The final vehicle was a pickup which Mr. Parker would drive hauling a third header. Mrs. Parker and Robbie would ride in that pickup. We were leaving behind one combine, one grain trailer, the employee camper, and one header. I think. I wasn't sure I could keep track of it all at that point. When we reached Texas, the majority of us would start working immediately while three of us would drive back with two semis and a pickup to get the rest of the machinery. By law, the last combine wouldn't be hauled down to Texas until daybreak. Transporting such wide loads was dangerous at night because of overhang into the oncoming traffic. As everyone made their way to their assigned vehicles, Robbie Parker sauntered out of the house with his hands in his pockets. I had not seen him for 2 years. He was 14 now, I thought, and had turned so good-looking that I gaped and was really glad that I'd neatly braided my hair that morning. I only stopped gaping because my grandmother pushed me so hard that I lost my balance. I helped Oba-chan pack some of our essentials in the pickup we'd be driving, but we transferred the rest of our luggage to the employee camper, which would be driven out to us on the second trip. The only special things I brought into the pickup for myself were a spray bottle of DEET and my lifetime savings of $461, which included the special $20 bill my grandfather had given me when I was 5 years old. I could still remember him telling me,
"Someday this bill may be worth $1 million. It's called inflation."
Once everyone else was packed up and settled in, Mr. Parker pecked Mrs. Parker on the cheek and said,
"Let's roll, beautiful."
Chapter 5. The air was still cool as we all headed for Hargrove, Texas. I figured it would be about a 6-hour drive. I glanced into the side mirror at the line of vehicles behind us. Oba-chan turned onto the highway, then said to me,
"Too young to stare at the boys."
I wasn't staring.
"You staring like he alien from outer space. Boys not alien, they real, and they cause trouble."
"How do they cause trouble?"
"You too young to know that."
She looked at me as if making a decision. Then she said,
"Maybe I tell you if I have time before I die."
"I'm a boy," Jazz said. "I know how they cause trouble."
"You do not," I scoffed at him.
"Stop fight now or I saw you both out of truck and you have to walk to Texas. Jazz, this not involve you," Oba-chan said. "Summer, you walk to Texas, you be sorry. I walk 20 mile once when I a girl and by end I could hardly move. And don't think I forget what we talking about. No stare at the Robbie. Everybody notice."
I sighed and gave Thunder's ears a tug. He had natural ears and a docked tail like a lot of Dobermans today. In some countries, it was against the law to crop Doberman's ears. Personally, I approved of this law. In fact, if someone tried to crop my own ears, I would bite them.
"You listen to me?" Oba-chan said.
"Yes, Oba-chan, I heard you."
"Not to hear. Listen," she shot back.
I looked out the window at a cattle farm. In Kansas agriculture, cattle was number one in terms of how much money it brought the state. Wheat was a distant second. But my whole life had revolved around wheat.
"You listen to me?" Oba-chan asked again.
"Well, how old were you when you started staring at boys?"
I asked back.
That has nothing to do with it.
But how old were you? I persisted.
In my day, girl not married by 18, she a reject. Different today. Girl get married at 30. So if I stare at the boy at 12 and get married at 18, that mean you stare at the boy at the 24 and get married at 30.
So you were 12? I got more alert. I might finally be about to win an argument with Oba-chan.
I don't say that.
Then what are you saying?
I am say you make fool of yourself. Give me apple.
I rummaged through the bags on the floor next to me. There's only pears. I think we left the apples in the camper.
Don't get smart. Give me pear.
I resignedly gave my grandmother a pear. It was obviously pick on summer day. Once I asked my mother if Oba-chan loved me, and Mom said, "Of course she does. She thinks about you all the time." I knew she thought about me all the time, but that wasn't the same as love, was it? No, it wasn't. My grandmother ate the pear, seeds, stem, and all, and then she began emitting that low growl.
Ugh.
After a few minutes of this, Jazz asked, "Are we pulling over?"
"No can," Oba-chan said.
"They'll understand," I said.
"They no hire us again."
We had brought 7 bottles of painkillers with us. "Do you want some painkillers?" I asked.
6,
she replied. I pulled out a bottle and read the label. It says take 1, and if that doesn't work, you're allowed to take another. Plus, I had read in a magazine at the dentist's office that taking too much over-the-counter medicine was bad for your liver.
Give me 6.
Oba-chan, that's dangerous.
I 67, you young, so you don't understand yet. Pain more important than death.
I thought that over. I remembered that when I had malaria, the pain in my joints had made me wish I were dead. Up until then, I'd thought that pain was something that came from the outside, but malaria had taught me to fear pain that came from within. I knew my grandmother's pain came from within. So I handed her the 6 pills. She chuckled.
Easy to get my way with you.
I gave her a bottle of water. We had filled plastic bottles with tap water because my grandparents couldn't understand why anyone would pay for something that you could get from your own faucet. Personally, I loved bottled water. It made me feel extravagant and grown up. When I grew up, I would keep bottles of water in my house at all times. I would have 3 dogs. My husband would love bottled water and dogs and me. Or maybe I would never be able to afford bottled water. Maybe I wouldn't have any dogs. Maybe I would never feel extravagant and grown up. And maybe I would never get married. I thought of what Oba-chan had said about not stopping the convoy for her. Timing was the essence of harvesting. If we held up the progress of the harvesting team, she was right. We would not get hired again, even if the Parkers liked us as people. When the wheat was ready to harvest, it was ready to harvest now, and my grandfather would be working 14 or even 16-hour days. Oba-chan was squeezing the steering wheel so hard I thought her beautiful hands might snap. "Will you be all right?" I asked her.
"It no matter," she replied simply.
And unfortunately, I knew that was true. I started to think about the next few months. The last time we'd worked for the Parkers, Mrs. Parker had compiled a binder of every meal with every recipe we were to make. For 6 days a week at breakfast, the drivers ate just milk and cereal. But on Sundays, we made a full-on breakfast, pancakes or French toast or omelets. We made about 250 meals that year. I swear we followed every recipe exactly, but once in a while Mrs. Parker would wrinkle her forehead and say something like, "Maybe you skimped on the sugar?" "Hey," I said suddenly, "how come Jazz doesn't have a job?" My grandmother glanced into the rearview mirror.
"Summer, you make one more trouble, my head explode and you guilty of a murder."
I started to say that heads don't explode, but the radio came to life just then, and Mrs. Parker's voice reported, "It's already 82 degrees in Hargrove." That was nothing. One year in Texas, the temperature was 110 when we arrived. Actually, I was kind of relieved that it was going to be a hot day in Hargrove. The things you feared most during harvest were rain and hail and letting the wheat set too long past its prime. But heat was nothing. Once the wheat was ready to harvest, the weather was the boss. After that came the farmer, and close behind were the custom harvesters. The drivers were below them. The cooks were probably even below that, because the drivers could live without us if they had to. Basically, if either the farmer or the Parkers told one of us to do something, we would do it. And me, I was probably at the very bottom of the heap. So even though the Parkers were nice, we weren't all equals. The Parkers liked to say we were all a family, but that simply wasn't true. I took out my mosquito notebook and began to leaf through my drawings, even though it was hard to concentrate in the bumpy truck. I was much better at drawing now than I was at the beginning, but I still wasn't very good. My secret goal was to make mosquitoes out of real gold and sell them for jewelry. I had made some big mosquitoes out of clay, but the large size didn't capture their delicacy. It was hard to get the clay thin enough. It always chunked up, and the mosquitoes always looked more like bumblebees. I would have to work on that. I thought again about how when something almost killed you, you were bonded to it for life. But even during the worst parts of my illness, I knew in my mind that the mosquito hadn't been trying to kill me. That hadn't been its goal. It was just trying to get blood so it could lay eggs. Only female mosquitoes bite you. I stopped at one of my favorite drawings, of a mosquito feeding on nectar amid beautiful flowers. I had started that picture 17 times before I finally got it right. Almost dying makes you think a lot about death. I remember thinking of my family going on without me, of Jazz growing up and being some kind of rocket scientist with exactly two friends, of my mom crying and crying that I was gone. And now I had the second chance at life. My friends all felt like life would go on forever, but I realized it was something happening now. And yet, I didn't know what to make of it. "It's because your personality hasn't settled yet," my mother liked to say, as if my personality was dust floating in water. I went through every page of my mosquito book. When I looked up, Jazz was sifting through some papers the Parkers had given us. In the mirror, I could see that Oba-chan's face was pale and worried. She was in a lot of pain. "We've got 22 jobs," Jazz said, holding up one of the papers. The Parkers had given everyone a list of the jobs we'd been assigned. "First one, 7,000 acres. "I have to pee," I said.
"Look in the blue bag," Oba-chan replied.
I rummaged through the same bag that held all of Oba-chan's painkillers and spotted a glass jar. "You're kidding, right?" I said.
"No kidding. Don't spill."
Mrs. Parker had pulled us all over a couple of hours earlier at a truck stop, but I didn't have to go then. I had to go now. Jazz turned to me, probably to see if I was really going to use the jar.
"Mind your own business," I said.
I decided I don't have to go that bad. The windows were open, the hot air blowing into our faces. I thought about Robbie and made a mental note to rebraid my hair before we stopped again. It was windy out, the wheat field rippling as we passed. It looked less yellow than usual, more like the color of coffee with a whole lot of milk in it. Ji-chan had once told me that he knew someone who knew someone who knew someone who knew a woman who could tell your fortune by looking at the way the wind blew the wheat around you. I would be interested in meeting that woman. A layer of cloud seemed to be pressing down toward us, more like a ceiling than the sky. Despite those clouds, Texas had mostly been dry this year. When the weather was dry while the wheat was growing, the fields would yield fewer bushels per acre. One harvest in Texas, when there had been a lot of rain, the average yield in the state had been nearly 60 bushels an acre, which was quite a lot. This year, it would certainly be less, maybe not even 30.
Almost there, Mrs. Parker finally announced over the radio.
I closed the back windows and redid my braids, then sat with sweat dripping down my face. I held up a paper towel to my forehead.
Look what summer's doing, Jazz said.
I saw, Oba-chan said. She make a saru out of herself for boy.
Saru meant monkey. I could not wait to be out of that truck. The convoy turned down a dirt road where a makeshift sign that read Parker's Turn Here was stuck on a tree. When we reached the farm, a man was already standing outside motioning us to park. I got out and saw there were water and electrical hookups. That meant we would be staying on the farm in the campers instead of going to an RV park. It was a lot easier when you stayed on the farm, but I missed the RV parks because there were always other harvester kids there. As soon as the Parker's camper was hooked up, I was going to use the bathroom in there. Mr. and Mrs. Parker shook the man's hand.
Mr. Lasky, I'm Lonnie Parker. This is my wife, Jenna. Nice to meet you, Mr. Lasky said.
Mr. Lasky was a tall, balding man, and he looked concerned.
I hope you're ready to hit the ground running. There's rain forecast for next week. Absolutely. We brought enough machinery this first trip to start right now. Great, great. I want this to be a quick job.
He said that with the slightest hint of warning in his voice, like if it wasn't a quick job, he would be irate.
We'll get your wheat in before then, don't you worry.
Mr. Parker studied the fields around him and the low clouds.
Those don't look like rain clouds. Yep, not to worry.
Mr. Lasky nodded. He stood with his arms crossed in front of him and he looked impatient. I'd discovered that some farmers were very tense people because nearly their whole earnings for the year depended on how their wheat crop turned out during these few days of harvest. All year they prayed for rain until harvest came and they prayed for no rain. Some of them were real nice, but others were just plain grumps. But I got it. The wheat couldn't be much more than 13.5% moist or the grain elevators wouldn't accept it. Wheat that was too moist could cause fungus. The combines had instruments to measure the wheat's moisture content, and there were handheld gadgets to measure with as well. The Parkers used a moisture meter that looked like a thermos cup. You would fill it with wheat, and it would tell you what the moisture level was. Grain elevators checked for moisture, weeds, and protein content. Wheat that was too dry would weigh less and thus be worth less. Plus, if you let the wheat ripen too long, the protein content could fall. So timing was everything. Another thing that frightened the farmers was hail. Hail could break the wheat or smash it to the ground. I had actually seen a farmer, a big, burly man, cry during a hailstorm. So farmers just wanted to get the harvest over as soon as possible. As I said, I got it. Mr. and Mrs. Parker drove the combines down off the trailers they were hauled on. I squinted into the distance and didn't see the end of the wheat field. The house over to the left was big. I wondered how many kids the Laskys had and whether we would meet them. Ji-chan steered the tractor and grain cart off the trailer. Then the Parkers had to attach the headers to the front of the combines. The headers, as I mentioned, were the rotating parts of the combines that actually cut the wheat. John Deere support trucks always followed the harvest because different custom harvesting companies would all be in about the same part of the country at the same time. The support trucks were full of combine parts and manned with John Deere mechanics who could come and help you with your combine if there was a problem. Usually, you didn't need an expert because most harvest crews had a good mechanic on hand. In our case, the best mechanic was Mr. Parker. But if something electrical broke down, you needed a John Deere guy. I watched Mr. Dark and Mr. McCoy get into two semis and Mr. Parker into a pickup. They roared off back to Kansas to get the rest of the machinery. Poor guys, they'd be driving practically 18 hours by the time they were done. Then two of the combines and the grain cart headed for the field. It all sounded like an airplane taking off. When the noise subsided, Mrs. Parker, looking worried, approached us.
You should probably find a grocery store right away so you can make the crew sandwiches.
She handed a stack of binders to Obachan.
I planned out the meals for the entire season, complete with recipes like always. It took me a long time, so please follow the meal plans to a T.
She started to walk away, then turned around again.
Why don't you make them tuna sandwiches for lunch? Just remember that my husband isn't fond of too much mayonnaise. He likes mayonnaise, but not too much of it.
She gave a little laugh.
Of course, he won't be having lunch today since he left, but I'm reminding you for the future.
She stood for a moment, frowning some more.
On second thought, why don't you make chicken salad sandwiches? I have tuna casserole on the menu for next week, so we don't want to bombard everyone with tuna, and I have tuna again for sandwiches on day 12.
She still couldn't bring herself to turn around and leave.
Always use wheat bread. I don't know why they still manufacture white bread.
Her voice trailed off. She bit at a thumbnail.
And get ice for the cooler, since the refrigerators are in the other camper. You can put any extra food in the cooler. It's a big one. Get enough to make sandwiches for dinner, too.
She handed just 2 20s to Obachan.
She has a photographic memory, said a voice behind me.
I turned around and found myself face to face with Robbie. OMG. He was talking not to Obachan, but to me.
She has the menus for the entire season in her head. I think we should save her brain when she dies to compare it to Einstein's.
Wow, I said.
That wasn't the most brilliant thing to say, so I added,
That's amazing.
That still didn't seem very brilliant, so I came up with, I mean, it's really cool, Einstein. That was the best I could do for now.
Robbie doesn't like it because I never forget a thing, Mrs. Parker said with a laugh. Isn't that true, hun?
She looked at him with what could only be called overwhelming love.
It makes you hard to argue with, he said.
But he smiled, and she smiled. I could probably count on 2 hands the times Obachan and I had smiled at each other, and those times only happened when we were watching her favorite TV show, America's Funniest Home Videos. I think watching people fall down and barrel into trees was her most favorite thing to do in the world. Mrs. Parker and Robbie walked off together to the combine she was driving. Mr. Lasky headed toward his house. There was nobody left to tell us where a grocery store might be.
Chapter 6
After I went to the bathroom and Obachan's aspirin kicked in, she, Jazz, Thunder, and I got back into the pickup. Obachan made a slow, wide U-turn, and once again we were bumping along the dirt road.
Which way should we head? I asked. I didn't see a store on the highway.
If I'd been with my parents, I knew I wouldn't have to participate in finding a store. They would take care of it. But with Obachan, who could say what would happen? Then out of nowhere, the thought popped into my head. I should have used the word impressive, as in, it's really impressive that your mother has a photographic memory. I made a mental note to say that to Robbie some other time.
Is there a map in the glove compartment? Obachan asked.
Jazz began going through the glove compartment. He turned over each slip of paper and read it for a moment, as if that were the only way to determine if it was a map.
Just a map of the whole country, he finally said.
Obachan drove to the highway and kept going until we got to a gas station. Then she pulled up and turned to me.
Go ask where a grocery store is, Miss Talk So Good.
I got out and walked into the station. There were a few candy bars and drinks for sale, but there was no mini-mart like in many gas stations. The attendant was sitting on a stool behind the counter.
Hi, I said.
Hello, young lady.
Can you tell me where the closest grocery store is?
What are you looking for?
I paused. A grocery store, I repeated.
I mean, what do you need to buy?
Bread, canned chicken, lettuce, tomatoes, and mayonnaise.
Sounds like you want to make a sandwich.
He lazily spun his stool around until he was facing me again.
Yes, sandwiches.
The man asked,
You need any drinks to go with those sandwiches?
Yes, drinks.
He gestured grandly to where the drinks were in a small refrigerator. I hesitated before turning and walking out and up to the driver's seat window.
He wants to know if I need to buy any drinks. They have Coke and stuff.
He tell you where grocery store is?
Oba-chan asked.
No, I think he wants me to buy drinks.
How much drinks cost in there?
I didn't ask.
Oba-chan looked worried.
What if drinks here too expensive and we no have enough money for food? Get in seat.
She restarted the engine as I got in. We drove to a small restaurant, but it was closed, maybe forever. It wasn't boarded up, but it just had that aura of something that was closed forever. Farther down the highway, more glass windows and what used to be stores were boarded up. I remembered learning in school that some small towns in the Great Plains were closing up as children grew older and moved to the cities. We drove all the way to the grain elevator about 10 miles away.
I go this time, Oba-chan said.
She got out and was gone for what seemed like hours. I started timing her after a while. 30 minutes passed. The sweat dripped down my forehead, getting deet into my eyes. They instantly started tearing up. The sting was so bad.
I think you should go in, Jazz finally said.
No, here she comes. Oba-chan got into the truck with a paper in her hand.
What took you so long? I asked.
We talk about the wheat and Japanese woman his second cousin marry.
She started the engine.
What does she have to do with wheat?
Nothing. He want to talk about it after he see me. I talk to him because he give good direction.
She pulled onto the highway again.
Big store in the next town, but the smaller one nearby. Keep eye open for Carver Avenue.
We drove about a mile before we spotted Carver. Oba-chan turned right, and we drove and drove and drove until she finally pulled over. She handed me the directions.
Read this. What I do wrong?
I looked at the lines scrawled on the paper. We were supposed to turn left on Carver.
He tell me right and draw left on the map. I may not have photograph of memory, but I know I write about this.
When we finally reached the store, more than an hour had passed since we'd left the Lasky place. I had a sinking feeling that this was probably what the whole summer would be like as we searched for groceries in each new town, with me, Miss Talk So Good, asking clerk after clerk where the grocery store was. But it didn't bother me so much. I knew we were here to save the mortgage. By the time we got back to the farm, it was close to 2:30. Oba-chan's back was killing her. Still, she laid out a plastic cloth we'd bought with our own money and made the sandwiches on that. Oba-chan was a perfectionist. Her sandwiches were works of art. She cut them into perfectly symmetrical triangles and always added a slice of onion so thin you hardly knew it was there. And the meat was always in just the right place. You'd never take a bite and get too much bread and not enough meat. Then she'd use parsley to make it fancy, except she tore off parts of the parsley so that it looked more like a little flourish. I'd actually helped her write an article about sandwich making. She sent the article to a local paper, and when they didn't publish it, she canceled our subscription. The crew was probably starving to death.
You tell Mrs. Parker I finish. Don't say we finish, she told me.
I climbed into the pickup and pressed the button on the radio. Mrs. Parker was still out driving one of the combines. My grandmother is finished making the sandwiches, I told her. She'll be right there. Oba-chan had climbed into the driver's seat with the sandwiches. What on earth took so long? Mrs. Parker asked.
We had to find the store, I said politely. There was no answer at first, and then she said,
All right.
She clicked off, then clicked on again.
I forgot to tell you about the timetable. Starting tomorrow, we need breakfast at 7, lunch at noon, and dinner at 7. Why did it take so long to find a store?
We were unfamiliar with the area, I answered.
Couldn't you ask someone?
Oba-chan yanked the microphone out of my hand and said,
Man at the elevator where we get direction have to talk to me before he give me direction. It's not my choice. You need to talk to him.
What did he have to talk to you about?
His second cousin wife.
No one said more into the radio.
Mrs. Parker already drive me crazy, Oba-chan said.
But I figured that before long, Oba-chan would be driving Mrs. Parker crazy, so it would be even Steven. Just for something to do, Jazz, Thunder, and I drove into the field with Oba-chan. Robbie was busy with what appeared to be a handheld video game or maybe a smartphone. Jazz would probably have sold me for a quarter if it meant he could get a video game. I thought about yelling hi to Robbie, but why couldn't he be the one to call out to me? So neither of us said anything to the other, and after we gave Mrs. Parker the sandwiches, the combine roared away, Robbie disappearing into the fields. When we got back, Oba-chan groaned,
My neck is a kill me, so you make dinner later. I may get up to help. Urgh.
She lay down on the ground right where she'd been standing in the shade from the pickup. First, she dropped to all fours, and then she lowered herself carefully to her back. I sat in the shade beside her and opened my sketchbook to a half-finished picture of a mosquito hanging in the air near a leaf. I had to draw his leg over and over before I could get it right. It was a male. A male mosquito has feather-like antennae that are fun to draw. The antennae of the female are more simple, and the palps are short. Palps help mosquitoes taste. Then there's the evil proboscis. It's like a living spear that stretches out from around a mosquito's mouth. The females use it to stick in you and suck your blood and sometimes kill you. I had memorized this from Wikipedia. Death is the permanent termination of the biological functions that sustain a living organism. Once, I had a very old dog, Chica, who one day followed me to the washing machine. I stopped to pet her, and I could sense that she really, really, really wanted to be petted. Then I pulled a comforter out of the washer and put it in the dryer. When I turned around, my dog was lying dead. I lay on the ground beside her and just held her until my mother found us. I didn't even know how much time had passed, but the dryer had stopped. She'd known she was about to die, and that was why she'd been so open to being petted. My mother said that when I was dying and the nurse had left the room, Oba-chan had lain beside me on the bed and held me. That was so hard for me to believe, I thought my mother might be lying. After I finished with my mosquito sketchbook, I picked up one of the books I had to read for school. It was called A Separate Piece. My teacher said I had to read 3 books over the summer. Even though it was for older kids, I chose A Separate Piece because it was the only book in English that Ji-chan had ever read, and he wanted me to explain it to him. He was very troubled by the book and had been after me to read it all year. It was about 2 Caucasian guys who went to a boarding school during World War II. In other words, it was about a world completely alien to mine. I was already on page 30. Some kids I knew would read only books that were about something they could relate to, but I was interested in other stuff. Jazz, in a huge straw hat, worked on his Lego building right out in the hot sun. He was concentrating so hard on the building that I don't know if he even realized he was in the sun. His construction was really very impressive. There were 4 floors with balconies, and the insides were furnished. Nobody could talk to him when he was focused on his Legos because he might have a meltdown. He might pound his head on something. He might throw a cup at you. I looked around at the wheat in the distance. I knew there was also wheat on the other side of the highway. There was nowhere to go except to other wheat fields and nothing to do except walk through the wheat fields. All three of us were drenched with sweat. I wished they had brought the employee camper first, but I also understood that working the fields was more important than whether or not I was sweating. I read the last few chapters of a separate piece. Okay. That wasn't a good move. Now I felt even more confused. So I went back to where I was before to keep reading from there. Later, as I took the chicken out of the cooler to prepare sandwiches for dinner, I suddenly realized I was thinking about a separate piece, just like Ji-chan. The book made me think about what was deep inside of me. Was I good, or bad, or mixed, or what? And was the way I acted every day the real me, or was the real me somewhere so deep that I would never even know it? I made a mental note to talk about this with Melody when I got back home. Then I tried to remember, wasn't there another mental note I made to myself earlier? I couldn't remember. Maybe I needed to start writing down my mental notes. Who knows what all I'd forgotten to do over the years. But then what if someone got a hold of my notebook and some of the mental notes were embarrassing? Back to a separate piece. Why would a book in which hardly anything happened for most of the time eat at me so much? It was the weirdest thing. The radio crackled to life. It was Mrs. Parker. If you can hear me, can you cut the sandwiches into rectangles, not triangles? It makes them easier to eat.
I'm going to cut her into rectangles, murmured Oba-chan.
I hopped into the truck and picked up the radio. Hi, it's Summer. We'll definitely cut into rectangles this time. I think my grandmother thinks triangles look better.
I don't mean to micromanage, said Mrs. Parker. But could you and or she also use just a touch more mayonnaise? I think even my husband would have liked a bit more if he were here.
Okay. I waited, but she didn't say anything further. Actually, I want less mayonnaise on mine, Jazz said. And as long as we're bossing you around, can you slice my tomato really thin? I like some tomato, but not too thick.
I like thick tomato, Oba-chan said.
I wished I had an MP3 player so I could drown everybody out. We'd bought a cheap knife at the grocery store, and when I tried to cut Jazz's tomato thin, I ended up squishing the tomato. And don't give me the end part of the tomato with all the skin, Jazz said. Even if it's thin, I don't want that part.
If Oba-chan weren't right there, I would have told him to shut up.
Then I did say it.
Shut up!
I waited for Oba-chan to say something, but at first she didn't. Finally, she said,
You grounded, Summer. Urgh.
How could I be grounded on harvest?
You too sensitive. You need to be a tough cookie.
Actually, harvest was a good time to make trouble, because I couldn't get grounded. I made a mental note to test out that theory. Then I sighed and carefully cut a thin slice of tomato. I made the sandwiches with a little bit more mayonnaise, except for Jazz's sandwich. I gave everyone except Jazz a thick slice of tomato. And I cut all the sandwiches in half into rectangles. Problem with me, I decided, was that I was too good. I mean, every so often I was bad, but nobody took me seriously enough. Like, Jazz had everybody in the palm of his hand because of his temper. Everyone took his temper seriously. If I threw a cup across the room like Jazz sometimes did, my entire family would have a nervous breakdown. But maybe that wasn't a bad thing if it made them take me more seriously. The radio came to life again.
Are the sandwiches ready?
I grabbed the radio. Yes, they're ready, I said. We drove out to the combines, and Mrs. Parker couldn't stop herself from examining the sandwiches before she distributed them. She suddenly ran her hand over my head and said, How are you holding up, dear? I'm reading and drawing, and Jazz is playing with his Legos.
Don't worry, it won't be this bad every time.
Then she gave a laugh.
Well, I can't promise you that. One thing about harvest is that anything can happen.
I smiled. Remember that time I fell off the combine and everyone thought I had a concussion? She laughed again.
Honey, some of us just aren't blessed with coordination.
I couldn't stand Robbie just sitting up there, so I said, How's Robbie doing?
He's obsessed with Angry Birds. I have to hide his phone every night so he doesn't stay up playing.
I looked up longingly at him, then quickly looked away so Mrs. Parker wouldn't notice. After that, I really had nothing to do, especially since it would be dark soon. We didn't have any artificial lights, so at least there wouldn't be so many insects around. Just the usual crickets. They were chirping up a storm because of the high temperature. They chirp faster the higher the temperature. If all went well, the semi with the employee camper would probably be back by 1 a.m., maybe around the same time that the combines would finish. I found a pen and a piece of scratch paper in the glove compartment of the truck and turned on the inside light. Let's see. On a perfect day, four combines together might cut 80 acres per hour. 80 times 16 hours of work equals 1,280 acres a day. So, since the farm was about 7,000 acres, and since nothing ever went perfectly, it would take at least 7 days to finish the job. So you already know that the grain cart dumps into the grain trailers, and the big rigs take the full trailers to the elevators. Sometimes the wait at the elevators is as long as 5 or 6 hours. Other times, nobody at all will be in front of you. The nearest elevator, the one Oba-chan stopped at, was going to stay open until around 10 p.m., she'd found out. Some custom harvesters try to have the combine bins and grain trailers empty around elevator closing time. Then everyone would keep working for a few hours more until all the containers were full again. Only then, at 1 or 2 a.m., did the work stop. That way, early in the morning, when the elevators opened, the big rigs could go straight to the elevators to dump. The Parkers didn't like to work their drivers past midnight unless it was necessary to beat the weather. And why was I thinking about this stuff? I was done for the day and couldn't wait for our camper to arrive so we could all go to sleep in style. But I wondered if Ji-chan was getting tired out there. I got out again and walked around with Thunder. I heard buzzing in my ear, a mosquito. I screamed and shook myself like crazy. Jazz always said that when I shook myself, I looked like a zombie on fire. It was only a myth that just female mosquitoes buzz. Both male and female mosquitoes buzz. Thunder barked, but I wasn't sure what he was barking at. I loved being in my bare feet. So I took off my shoes, which my mother always warned me not to do, because apparently you could step on all sorts of terrible things outside. To her, the ground was a battlefield. It was pitch black, which made it kind of exciting. Thunder and I walked slowly so as not to walk into anything. It was daytime in Japan right now, and my mother was probably helping out with my great-grandparents, washing them or feeding them or just keeping them company. I stopped and stared straight ahead into the darkness. I felt like I was part of the darkness, in a good way. Sometimes I loved farm life, the way you felt like you were such a part of the dirt and the wheat and the trees and the grass. I heard something moving, and my heart began to thud. It was probably a coyote, and Thunder would scare it away. Still, now that I was scared, I didn't want to walk anymore. Ji-chan said that since I'd gotten sick, I'd turned into a scaredy cat. Well, things moving in the dark were scary. I turned around and hoped I was going in the right direction. I couldn't even see any lights from the combines. They must have been on the far end of the field. I called out, Jazz? He didn't answer, so I called louder. Jazz? Oba-chan shouted back, You bother everybody with your noise! You walk aloud like a rhinoceros in the jungle. I seriously doubted that she had ever heard a rhinoceros walk in the jungle, but I was glad to hear her voice. I walked toward it. In a few minutes, Oba-chan said, Over here. I held out my hands and moved them back and forth until I felt the pickup. I stepped on Oba-chan's hand by accident and she cried out, My hand! You ruined my perfect hand. I'm sorry.
Where's Jazz?
He sleep in the truck. You go, too.
I climbed into the pickup with Thunder and lay down on the back seat. Thunder tried crawling on top of me. I couldn't push him off, though, because he was too strong and stubborn. So I lay there with 95 pounds of Doberman on top of me. Seriously, Dobermans have elbows like rocks. I concentrated all my energy the way I did when I was holding Jazz, and with a grunt, I pushed off Thunder. He curled up on the floor and went to sleep. I woke up to a commotion. A big rig had arrived with an employee camper. Jazz was sitting up, stretching on the front seat. The back doors of the pickup couldn't open unless a front door was open, so I climbed over the front seat and got out with Thunder and Jazz. Mr. Lasky had apparently woken up with the noise as well and was standing nearby in a robe. The other combines were in from the field. I squinted at the headlights of the big rigs, then checked my watch. 2:47 a.m. Mr. Parker was already attaching the employee camper to the water and electricity hookups. Yay, a real bed. I staggered into the camper and felt for the light along the wall. I turned it on and found myself standing in the kitchen. To the right of that was a couch and TV. Then I checked out both ends of the camper, which turned out to be identical. Each had six beds, 2 3-level bunks. I knew my grandparents would want the bottom bunks. I took a middle bunk so that Thunder would be able to get up into it. I told him, "Hup," and he struggled onto the narrow bed. Even though the bed was hard, it felt really comfortable compared to the back seat of the pickup. I usually like to take a shower before bed, but I was so tired, I thought I'd be able to fall asleep without being clean. The rest of my family trudged in together. Ji-chan looked exhausted. The lines on his face seemed deeper than usual, as if he were a lifetime smoker.
"You want the air conditioner, Toshi?" Oba-chan asked.
"Hai,"
he said, lying down with a grunt.
"I'll get it," Jazz said.
He turned it on and climbed to the top of the other bunk. I could tell how tired he was by how he kind of slapped his hands onto the rungs instead of grabbing them firmly. Oba-chan eyed her bed critically, then pushed at it a couple of times with her hand.
"Summer, pull a mattress off for